Hello, my name is Christopher Brooks, and I'm the host of Experience the Difference, the European Customer Experience Organisation's podcast series. In this series, we meet members from the ECXO to talk about the progress, the problems, and the practical solutions they're applying to customer experience in the world today. Today's guest is Anne-Laure de Boissier. Anne-Laure is the co-founder of Maybe. Maybe is a new platform available to clients which helps to measure customer emotions and turn them into actionable insight. I caught up with Anne-Laure to hear more about her thinking on customer experience and how it's evolved with the relevance of emotions being a part of everyday customer experience management. So we're here today with Anne-Laure, who we're delighted has joined us on the Experience the Difference podcast. And we're going to get into talking about the really important topic of emotion in customer experience. But before we do, let's introduce you to Anne-Laure and hear more from her. So good afternoon, Anne-Laure. How are you?
Good. Thank you for welcoming me on your podcast.
You're very welcome. And we're really keen that we understand this really key topic and get your perspective on it. So we look forward to hearing that. But before we do, it's always great to give our listeners a better appreciation of your current role in the world of customer experience. And more interestingly, sort of the journey you've taken to get there.
I'm the co-founder of a startup named Maybe. And Maybe is a customer experience management platform, so a new generation of customer experience management platform that is based on emotions. And this platform is used by retail teams to facilitate the decisions they are making at the point of sale. So that's what I do today. But before creating Maybe, I worked in market research for more than 18 years. Both in France and in the US. So I have the dual perspective in terms of culture. And because of this experience in market research, I'm pretty familiar with understanding decision processes, purchase decision processes, and the role that emotions have across different cultures. My last job was being a business unit manager with a focus on luxury and lifestyle brands. So I actually got to sell and use metrics like NPS or customer satisfaction or even mystery shopping. And so this is when I started to experience some limitations around those metrics. And it's also when I started, of course, to have the idea of creating Maybe. And also it's when I actually met my business partner, Caroline.
Excellent. Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. So your background is in research, but interestingly, you've been working with some of the more conventional metrics that we use in customer experience. Really interesting to find people who push the boundaries, raise the standards. And I think one of the things in the European Customer Experience Organization, it's great to kind of share information with those who want to challenge what's going on, as opposed to just comply with it. Because I think, you know, the only way for progress is to sort of leave behind what we've done before and recognize it was a stepping stone to the future, rather than carrying it as heavy luggage everywhere we go.
Yes,
because we've always had it, so we've always got to carry it.
That was our ambition, with Maybe. It was really to challenge the existing systems.
How did you start to kind of identify emotions are going to play a much stronger part than just rational drivers than people had previously thought?
But it all started with a project we conducted with a big luxury group to actually develop a new way of measuring customer experience. And when I started to work on this project, the only thing I knew was about Net Promoter Score, mystery shop. But because they started to challenge us on those metrics, saying, hey, we are a luxury group. We cannot really use a standard NPS. It really looks like we are not so different. It's not very good for our image. And also, because we are a luxury brand, we are going to reach very high scores of NPS. So we don't really, it will not be useful for us to improve and to reach the standard of excellence of a luxury brand. So we got challenged around those metrics. That's why I started to think, okay, we need to find another solution. And we actually went back to some academic research in behavioral science, because we had this expertise in behavioral science. Went back to research. We read books about customer experience, about just even an experience in general. And we tried to get some inspiration from there to propose a new solution to this luxury brand. And they were very happy with it. And so the project went well. However, they did not actually build a real solution to embody, to encapsulate all our recommendations. So we did a great, I think, a consulting job. The luxury brand did not bring it to life. So we decided to not stay at the level of consultancy. But when we created Mayabi, we wanted to really be able to provide a product, a solution to brands that would encapsulate all what we've learned from behavioral science, providing a solution, a real product.
Were you moving into these fresh territories, isn't it? I mean, you're working with a client who's kind of given you permission to go forward in these areas. But what motivated you? What was your guiding star to kind of go forward? Were you looking to break boundaries, or was it a case of, you know, we need to get the right outcomes for the customer, our client, and therefore, yeah, you know, how we take this forward is, it needs to be this way. I mean, what drove you in that direction?
Yes, so we wanted to address the problems from our client at the beginning. So it was really, I wanted to satisfy our customer. So that's why we went to this direction. But after, what we assumed is that if this client had this kind of issues and challenges around traditional metrics, this client was probably not alone problem. So that's why also we said, okay, let's see if we can develop a product that would address several actually clients in the luxury industry. The other thing is, I think I'm with my business partner, we love shopping. We are customers ourselves, and we are customers of those brands. So that's why also we felt like it's important. This emotional part of the experience is very important, because we experienced it ourselves.
One of the big challenges I find is, obviously, it's owned by the customer. They're the ones who go through it. They're the ones who feel that anxiety or that relief or that exhilaration. It's much harder to get clients to understand just what that feels like, whereas it's very easy for them to understand the behavioral change they can get when they change prices or product features.
Yeah.
So part of this I can see is the methodology of capturing it, but then how do you contain that kind of very different currency of emotion and get your clients kind of engaged on the journey of focusing on how do we create a less anxious experience, or how do we create a more exhilarating experience?
But so yes, I agree that it's kind of striking to me. On one hand, we all agree that emotions matter, and it's almost like a pet theme. However, we kind of tend to leave the creation of emotional experience up to the chance, or we believe that we rely on intuition. Oh, emotion is something personal. It really depends on each individual. So it's difficult to integrate those emotions in a process. And there is a big difference in the way companies tackle the fluidity of an experience from a functional standpoint. So as you say, the price, or where should I place the checkout in my boutique or whatever, and the way the company is going to tackle the emotional quality of the experience. They do not proceed in the same way. So when you tackle the fluidity of an experience, you kind of rely on a process, you rely on design thinking, on UX experts. There is a method. When we talk about emotional experience, in this case, there is no real process. There is no real expert. We tend to rely on the individual creativity of the team or on the intuition of the team in the company. But to me, we are missing a method when we talk about emotions. It's like if people believe there is a contradiction between emotions and having a method. And to me, that's why for some people in a company, tackling customers' emotions, it kind of look like mounting the Everest. It's like something that looks very difficult. It's too random. I cannot control it. So I'm going to kind of leave the emotional part of the experience kind of as an afterthought. And it's not immediately integrated in the design of the customer experience. And personally, I'm really convinced that we should be able to address customer emotions also using a method, using a science. If we manage to have this method, it will also remove a lot of pressure from people who are working on customer experience. And that's why we are using a science, so behavioral science, to build a framework that will facilitate the creation of customer emotions.
From my engagement with some luxury brands, it's very easy in their design to create aesthetically pleasing experiences. If I take, for instance, I went to a luxury retailer and I was shown around the store and they showed me a staircase where Coco Chanel had come down and a private room where world famous directors had launched their films. As they took me around, I went over to the point of purchase. And I was horrified by what I saw. And I was thinking from an emotional perspective, if I am a regular shop, I'm probably standing here with a six-figure sum in my bank account. And I look at the insecurity now I see ahead of me, which is the payment experience. And I start to worry about the capability of this organization to manage my money. And I just looked around and I just thought, I could see that 95% of what they classed as experience was aesthetics. But what really mattered to me was, can I trust this organization going forward? I'm not a customer of theirs. So maybe I would forgive that point of purchase, but it felt too big. And yet they hadn't understood what was really mattering to me. So I can see how your work can really show some light on the different touch points and help the colleagues in these organizations really understand what's important. In terms of the emotional context. Can I just come to one thing is buzzing around my head, though, because in the world of customer experience, there are many companies who have taken the conventional metrics and built systems around them to try and sell a system. Mm-hmm. And you kind of say to them, what should I measure? And they will say, oh, whatever you want, it doesn't matter. And the real answer is, you know, I don't really care because I've got a system. I want to, you know, that's what I want to promote. You obviously have a situation where you've got very complex drivers of choice working there. Do you systemize? Can you systemize? Is there a need to systemize? I mean, what happens in that space?
Yes, we systemize and we can integrate our framework into the existing system. But so what we believe is two things. The first one is that when you think about an experience, not all moments of the experience have the same value. So, and typically what you were saying earlier, the checkout, so the end of the experience, is a very important moment of the experience. But then also during the rest of the experience, you cannot consider that all the moments are equal, that a positive experience is not an experience without negatives. It's an experience that will be able to create emotional peaks, and it actually has very important implications when you think about managing customer experience, because it means that the priority for a brand is not to correct all pain points and to deliver a 100% frictionless experience, because it's almost impossible for a brand. But what's going to be important is to be able to create those emotional peaks to make the experience memorable. And that's also how you're going to differentiate yourself. Because if you only focus on removing pain points, what you're going to get at the end is a pretty standard experience. it's the same as any other experience. And when you are a luxury brand, of course, this is not what you want. And this principle comes actually from behavioral science, from the pick and end rule, that your goal is to be able to create exciting moments to make sure that you have at least one peak, emotional peak during the experience. So that's really our first principle that's going to structure our system. Then once you say that, you could be, okay, what should I do? How do I build those peaks? So we can find inspiration in science because if you, I don't know if you know this book written by Dan and Chip Heath. The title of the book is The Power of Moments. And in this book, they actually analyze different kinds of experiences such as a graduation, a trip abroad, dinner in a restaurant, a board meeting. So lots of different experiences. And while they analyze all these experiences, they realize that there are four common characteristics to those experiences. And we use those four triggers in our solution to systematize the way we think about emotional experiences, to design your experience. And you can use those four triggers also to measure, to monitor the customer experience.
Those two parts really do bring it to life. I've worked previously, many years ago, with a technique called ZMET, which Professor Sultan looked at metaphors and similes in terms of we're lousy as communicators, aren't we? And we use metaphors and similes much more effectively than we do just our narrative. And I remember the chief executive for a large bank hearing this stuff about men wear hats because they don't like confrontation and these sorts of things. He was about to flip the desk over because the research, it was fascinating stuff from the research company. But when he said, so how do I apply this? What do I do? They were like, we don't know. It's exciting stuff. We know that couples like growing vegetables to put on the table when their parents come over to prove that they're actually coping in life. And it was to the point you just said, I need to code it. I need to codify this to understand how I can make the most of it. So that second part that you talk about is so powerful.
The second trigger is about the elevation. So it's the ability of the brand to surprise you, make sure you have a pleasant surprise, that you go beyond the routine. The third trigger is the alignment, to create a connection with your customer, to have the feeling that you share common values, you are part of the same community. And the last trigger is about the knowledge, to make sure that the customer is going to fuel their curiosity, is going to learn something about the brand.
There'll be many people out there who want to explore the topic further. I'm guessing we've spoken about luxury, but you see this as being evidenced in mass consumer brands, in B2B. This is generic, isn't it, in terms of a concept that could be taken elsewhere?
Our primary focus has been on luxury brands because they are kind of ahead of the game in terms of emotions. But yes, at the end of the day, everybody should tend to this direction.
One question perhaps you can help answer, which I think probably will be in the lips of some of our listeners, is this is all very well and good, but you know, our senior leadership team are wed to some of these conventional metrics. How would someone go about helping senior leaders to understand measuring the actual change you want to achieve, looking to identify how important emotions are in achieving that change? What would be your advice to them to kind of start that conversation with their senior leadership team?
The first step, the idea is not to replace the existing metrics, because we know it's important to keep like some history and to be reassured, not change, you know, drastically everything. But what we recommend is to integrate our questions, our metrics into the existing system. So you can have a, and then to conduct some correlation analysis to see how the kind of traditional metrics and our metrics are correlated, and to see then which one is going to be the most impactful in terms of actionability. The boss of a company, what you want is your team to be able to take actions, not just to look at metrics. So if you see your team being able to make actions based on metrics, it's easy to make a decision about which tool to use.
Behavioral drivers are still sadly more of a fringe discussion rather than the core discussion in customer centricity. At this stage, how do you socialize discussions and get those very conventional thinkers in CX on board? And coming back to the ECXO, obviously, as a community, we have a lot of long-standing CX practitioners in there who will stand up and fight nail and tooth for some of the conventional measures. But we've also got some individuals new into the industry, and they are rightly challenging. Are these things working? Do they really work? How do you find that, a community like the ECXO, is it healthy in terms of being able to broadcast your opinions? Do you get good response from people when you're interacting?
Yes, because I think what's interesting in this type of organizations is that we are all experts of our topics. So it means that we are all open to listen. So actually, it doesn't mean that you agree with everybody, but at least when you are professionals and expert of a topic, you are open to listen to others. So it's a starting point. Personally, I do the same. I like listening to other people share their perspective, even if it's not the same as mine, because at the end of the day, it's kind of building up, and we can actually develop a better system. I think to me, it's very important to be open to an evolution of all this customer experience measurement system, because customer experience is changing. So we see it every day. We have a new kind of experiences. Technology around the experiences is evolving very quickly. It will have implications on the way we measure customer experience. We cannot believe that the experience, customer experience of tomorrow will still be measured with tools that have been developed like 20 years ago. So I'm not saying that we need to change everything, like to get rid of everything, but we need also to all those systems evolve to be relevant for the new kind of customer experiences that are developed by brands.
It's a continuous improvement process, customer experience, isn't it? You're always working to a better outcome. So it would be hypocritical if we find a better outcome, but because it's not convenient, we choose to ignore it. I think this is one of the challenges we do have at the moment, is there are better practices out there, but actually it is changing. We do need to hear new voices, new ways of thinking, and it's okay if they're still experimental and we're learning and developing that capability. That's a good thing. That restless tension is important. So it's great to hear you talk like that, Anne-Laure. And I'm a massive fan of behavioral change drivers, and fascinated to hear how your own understanding of the shortfall has led to your dedication and focus in this specific area. You said earlier as well, in the ECXO, there are many experts in their own area. Again, a very healthy thing to hear. There's a lot of people who say, I do it all. It's kind of like, I like saying, I do all of IT, or I do all of finance. It's like, it's not that you can't, it's too complicated. You have to know your piece and get an expertise in it, which clearly you've brought to the table today. So, and look, thank you so much for sharing the discussion. If people want to get a hold of you and discuss this in more details, where should they go?
I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, so I'll be happy to connect.
Wonderful. Look, thank you so much. I look forward to having future conversations in the ECXO with you. But for now, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.